Everybody, this is your host, Dr. Leland. It's been a hot minute since I said hello to you. We have so many opportunities hanging out right here at Level Up Academy. We have academic publishing. We have anthology of scattered pages. We have the Power Summit coming up tomorrow, right? It is coming on Saturday the 14th. It is free. So just go to my LinkedIn profile, hit calendar, and the Power Summit link will be there. Also, we have so many things, from magazines to radios to television to press release to podcasting to podcast circuit, live streaming. Oh, I mean, you just name it. We got you when it comes to amplification. But today we're going to talk about authenticity, how powerful magnet opportunities it is for us when we're authentic. When we show up as our true selves, embracing our values, strengths, and even vulnerabilities, we naturally build trust with others. Now, people can sense when we're genuine, and that trust becomes a foundation for deeper connections, whether it's personal or professional. When you lead with authenticity, you stand out. You aren't trying to fit into someone else's mold, but instead you create your own unique space. Now, this uniqueness attracts the right people, the right opportunities and partnership because you're aligned with your true purpose. Let's take an example. You and I are business owners. We authentically share our journey, both triumphs and challenges. And we can build a loyal customer base that resonates with our story. Similarly, leaders who lead authentically inspires teams to trust them and collaborate towards shared goals. Now, opportunities also flow more freely when you're authentic because there's no wasted energy in pretending or projecting an image you think others want to see. You're consistent, dependable, and your actions align with your words. Now, this alignment creates a reputation of integrity, and people are drawn to work with those who they believe in, right? So what does that mean, CJ? Authenticity creates a ripple effect, guys. When you're genuine, you inspire others to show up authentically as well, creating a culture of openness, innovation, and collaboration. In this environment, ideas flourish, relationships strengthen, and doors open to new opportunities you may not have been imagining. Imagine that, right? Now, in this world, we all seek connections, belonging, but authenticity is the bridge to meaningful opportunities. Be yourself. By staying true to who you are, not only achieve success, but also leave a legacy that reflects your true self. So let's go ahead and get started. If you look in here, tomorrow we're going to have some of our authors against the grain, finding belonging in a world of resistance. My dear sister, Susanna Dawn, is actually the one who initiated this project because we go back and forth. I was at Rebel. She's going to be doing that in February. I have two coming up for that anthology. March actually is for the next anthology. And that one is any, oh my God, it's scattered pages everywhere. It's any story that you want. So if you want to talk about your dog, you want to talk about your modeling career, you want to talk about your
you know, bad habits of gambling and how you got out of it, or you want to talk about the learned experience during your, you know, the non-laundry day because you have ADHD, you put the laundry and you forgot because you were doing something else, and then that something else you forgot and you're like, where's my coffee? And that was like hours ago, which I do. That's why I can talk about it. Yeah, you can write about it in March. But that is so amazing. So today at Mike Asherbrenner, Hounds of Business Community, we're going to have some of those authors at 4 p.m. PST, 7 p.m. EST. So join us there while we celebrate. And then tomorrow we celebrate on TV, Roku channel, Amazon Fire. That's where we're going. LG, Samsung, we're extending it. My TV network, I think they have about 3.5 million active users and downloads for our TV show monthly. So that's really amazing. So that's what we're going to be doing, celebrating, right? And that celebration will be moving towards everybody who's in it. And today your story is not heard, but tomorrow it will be if you join our Authors Club. Now, this one is a special. So if you have a master's degree in any discipline or a PhD or a DBA, I would love to have you part of my publishing journey. Whether it's just going to be me or Susanna, I'm still doing it because I've already talked to the publisher, okay? But I would love to have people in it because if you are thinking maybe when you get older, retirement age, you want to actually write or you want to teach, it's very competitive out there for the teaching people. You have to have some type of journals, some type of writing somewhere that you are known to extend your academics, right? And it basically sets you apart. It's very competitive. If you don't think it is, it's very competitive. You need a writing something. And this is your chance to be part of the calling all my academicians, right? And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to create a summit for our presenter. It's going to probably be a three-day summit. I've done this already as a dean of business and accounting and cyber at the different university that I work for. I've done this already one time, so that's why I know how the process works. But the summit is going to be for everyone to come who's very academics in terms of that. Here's the thing. What's my topic, CJ? You got to scan me because it has all the stuff in there to tell you the details. It's also on levelupwithdoc.com. You just click on Authors Club. It has all the details that you need, right? What are some of the topics that you want to research? This is a research-based type of writing. And you're probably saying, CJ, I've never done that. That's why all the things that comes with it is going to be three workshops. I'm going to teach you how to do APA 7. I am going to teach you how to create your own research. I'm going to create a structure for you so you can follow, and I'm going to help you where to find research so you will know how research writing works in a short amount of time. I teach teachers and I teach trainers when it comes to research. I teach doctoral program for research methodology as well in any discipline, healthcare, business, you name it. So that's why I'm doing this for everybody. I was just going to do it by myself, but I thought, why not do it with a group? I did it last time with, I believe, 10 PhDs, and I want to do it this time and put a master's in there. I think it would be interesting. And my publisher, I'm not the publisher. It's an academic publishing. That means it has to be at a higher level. And get this, they will do the marketing for us. And get this, we can do the marketing for us. It goes to Amazon too, but on top of that, it goes to 61 different countries. Guys, including China. What? I was looking at that list. I was like, huh? Because Chinese and Japanese will not just enter your books. They are very particular. They will filter the heck out of any books that goes into there. That's why it has to be research-based, right? And I picked 7 or 8 different topics that you can in any industry on those 8 different topics. If we all are going to do business, it's fine. I can structure the conversation. It's not a big deal. I'm pretty savvy on what to do with this research base, but it goes to universities that I've never even heard of. And I'm pretty good at pronouncing, and I can't even pronounce it. I'm like, that is so exciting, but they do it. The academic publishing do it. But here's the thing. The only thing you pay for is the editing, which I will also do edit. They also have their own editor, but I negotiated the price to literally nothing to do this. And I'm giving you my time to teach you how to write in academics. And if you have written in academics, how to write in academics for manuscript specifically. So I will do the structuring and everything for us. But this is only a once every 2 years. So you're like, oh, I'll do it next time. Maybe. Maybe I won't do it next time. I don't know. But this time I want to do it every 2 years because it's a heavy load on writing and academic publishing for a lot of people. So that's why I want to do that. Okay. But look at this lady. Ah, my sister. I'll see you soon, sis, for sure. Now, let's go to this Elon Vital. I think I'm saying it right. I think. Michelle will tell me if I said it wrong. Empowering women 45 plus to thrive beyond self-sabotage. Isn't that right? When we move to spaces, we're like, yes, we're leveling up, we're elevating. Our other self says, no, you're not good enough, CJ. I move one space down. Oh, not only you're not good enough, the friends that you even have don't even like you. Move space down. So my two spaces up is now at zero level. Don't stop there. Oh, whatever you're doing is actually not the right place or not the right business. So my two spaces is now minus three. We're so good at it. If we're anything else but is we're so good at sabotaging our own what? Milestones. Our own move, like move the needle a little bit. Right? And the reason we do that, it's because of our environment. It's because of the people that we surround ourselves with. It's how we grow up. There's so many reasons. There is no one reason. But talking about it and having some Sherpa, I'm calling Michelle a Sherpa. If you don't know what it is, just look it up. Having someone like her, a Sherpa, to guide you. I'm not saying Michelle is one all be all that she knows everything, but she knows her own zone of genius by living her life. It's not one of those certifications that you get because you study well. It's one of those life journey that creates wisdom that can help you. And what I love is her heart to help, not because I want to be having this vanity measures. No one cares. It's her heart to help. Women, and I'm in this group. I don't want to be 50 soon, but I'm gonna. But it's okay. It's okay. I'm gonna look cute going 50, guys. I'm gonna just dance to the music. That's right. I'm gonna own it. I do have self-sabotage thoughts, so I'm gonna be having a blast on this conversation. Hello, everybody. How are you guys doing? I hope all is well. Happy Wednesday midweek. Yes, I had time to put my hair. I actually found it on my luggage. I'm like, oh my God, I brought one hair out of 20. This is great. So that's what I did. So are you guys ready for Michelle? I hope you are because I know she's ready for you.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I said, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Man, it's beautiful outside. The sun came out today. It's cool weather here in Dallas. And I mean, life is good. So.
Yeah, that's good. I definitely is my internet, not your from my house. I wanted to give you the space to really think about who is Michelle Ward. I know you've been at the hounds also. I'm going to ask you a question about thinking back 20 years. Within your timeline, some of those significant changes in your life that got you here where you are today.
That's a great question. And I'm glad you asked it because I was actually thinking about that and talking to my sister about it this morning. I think one of the major caveats or catalysts for my recognition of who I am, apart from a daughter, a wife, a friend, you know, was becoming a mother. And I, you know, of course I identified with becoming a mother, but, and that was kind of my identifier for a while, but taking care of these little things and these little precious people really changed my perspective on who I am, who I want to be, who I want to influence them to be. And at the time, I didn't realize, you know, what I realize now about subconscious beliefs and self-sabotaging behaviors and the things that shape, that would shape their lives to become who they are now. But yeah, I would say that that was a big aha moment for me. And coming from a place where my mom and my dad were not, they did what they could, right? They did the best that they could do with what they knew. But I knew that I wasn't going to parent the same way that they did. And you don't know these things until you're there, right?
That's so true. No one gives us a playbook and to the T where we follow it. I mean, look at us. We have the Bible and the story. We still don't follow it to the T. You know what I mean? Like, right. We're just not made to follow to the T. But I am so blessed, actually, that Mike Ashurbrenner introduced us and be in the same space to get to know amazing people. He knows exactly the people that I like. I love people who loves others and use their wisdom to help others. And that's why I call you a Sherpa. Yeah. And now you're like, what is that, CJ? Just go with it. Just go with it.
I know what that is. And that's an honor to be called that. So thank you.
You're right. It's like a shaman, really, but it's more of a Sherpa that guides with wisdom, because I followed you. I stalk what your conversation is like, because I like consistency. Some people will show up so hype on other shows, and some people don't, you know, it's a different story on the other show. So I'm like, there's a disconnect. And for you, I've seen consistency, nothing but less than, you know, really amazing, truthful, authentic things about your life that you're willing to put out there. And you and I have conversations that sometimes it's really scary. No, not sometimes. Most of the time, it's really scary to talk about things that you feel, especially about your family, because it's not just the judgment that you get, but the shame. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, why did you say that? Now everybody thinks that our families are wacko, right? Like, and so when we always fear about judgment and we hide our own truths, you're always going to live like that, where you feel like you're not being authentic because you can't say what you want to say. So I just want you to know that I'm so proud of you. Thank now, you. What about your experiences that really push you to this limit where you're saying, you know what, I'm ready? What made you feel like you're ready?
Okay, that's another great question. So I've always been like an out of the box thinker. I've always been kind of like one of these people that, you know, you say, don't do this, and I want to like do it anyway. I have a daughter like that too. It's like, don't touch this, it's hot. And then she'll touch it and be like, ah, hot, you know, kind of thing. And so I was always that kind of person, but I wasn't allowed to be that person because it, you know, it wasn't being the rule follower that I was supposed to be. And so I ended up sticking myself in this box to fit into this box that other people wanted me to fit into. Well, I was super uncomfortable in that box, right? It was this facade I was living in, and I was not authentically me. And so I was trying to be who my husband wanted me to be, who the church wanted me to be, who my friends wanted me to be, who my family wanted me to be, who I thought I needed to be, how I needed to show up for my children based on what I had learned from my environment and from culture and all that. Well, at one point, it was in 2019, I finally recognized, oh my gosh, who am I? I was being a crazy person. Like, I was getting upset about stupid things. I was assuming people were talking about me, and I was, you know, projecting. And I mean, it was embarrassing. And then I was like, why do people even like me? You know, so I kind of went, that was a realization I had in 2019. And it was all linked to, I played on these tennis teams. And I don't know if anybody's ever played tennis for fun. Well, the fun turns into competition, and it turns less fun for some people. And I was one of those people, because I never felt like I was good enough at or for anything. And so, but that culminated into a big event over, you know, 2020 hit. And my daughter, who was a freshman in college, had to come home for 3 weeks, but ended up being home until she went back in the fall. My other daughter was a senior in high school, and she missed out on all the senior activities because of COVID. I had another business that, you know, it crushed under the weight of the pandemic. My dad, who I had not had a great relationship with because of me, not because of him. I was just angry and resentful towards him because of how I was raised. He was just a very, he was hurting, you know, and took it out on me. He was dying of cancer. And so he passed away in September of 2020. My dad had always been a buffer for my mom, and my mom, her drinking problem became very obvious to me during that time. And at the same time, I've been struggling with drinking for 10 years. And then my husband decided he didn't want to be married anymore. He decided he wasn't happy and was wanting to talk about getting out of the, you know, go towards a divorce. And I was shocked. And then one of my closest, dearest friends had to go into the hospital for an eating disorder. And I'd always been her rock, and I couldn't do anything for her. And so this all happened in less than a year, but most of it happened within like a 2 month window. And I finally was like, I can't do this anymore, you know? And that was my breaking point. And that's a lot. Now looking back, I see all the things that were leading up to that breaking point, and I'm really grateful for it. A lot of people won't see it. They'll become the victim. They'll become the, you know, they'll become the victim of their circumstances. But for some whatever reason, I had enough presence of mind to know that I was the common denominator in all these things, and that I had to change me before my circumstances would change.
I love that. You had introspection. That's what it was. So, speaking of tennis, over here is my tennis queen sister. I just had a conversation with her this morning. She was taking her kids and her husband to, you know, school. And I call her kids my niece and nephew. And Elise, hello. Tita said you have to not obsess with penny pasta, okay? She was having a conniption because one of her brothers ate the entire pasta that they had. So oh, no. Like for the morning before school, she was like not having it. And I can tell because she's also like neurodivergent like me. Like once we're hyper focused on something, we can't let it go, you know? Mm-hmm. And I should have sang let it go. Maybe she would have just sing with me, you know? Like yeah. It was 7:30 in the morning. I'm like, she's having a conniption because she was penny pasta. I'm like, don't you want like chocolate chip for breakfast or something?
Yeah.
Like pasta, you know? but anyway, Elise, I hope you're having a good day at school today. But this sister right here is really good at tennis. So yeah, I think that sometimes when you do things, when we don't have a grateful heart and we actually are not looking of what are some of accountability is a big thing that we're lacking in this entire world right now is accountability. Mm-hmm. We need to be accountable for our own actions. It's easy to point out other people's flaws, but you got to look at what hand did you play in this situation, right?
Right.
And you were very introspective. So I'm so glad that you're like, okay, well, what can I do? Because obviously I can't do anything else for other people. I want to go to Ilan Vital. I hope I'm saying that right.
That's correct. Yes, yes.
I want to know the roots of it and how you come up with that name. And then answer this question of what recurring patterns or habits in your life might be holding you back from achieving your goals, and why do you think they persist? And answer this more of like a general kind of thing, like pretend I'm your client. Mm-hmm. And I'm asking you this, like, how did you come up with what you're at and how would you deal with this?
Okay. So Ilan Vital, it was birthed out of the desire to replace the word Elan, empower from my vocabulary, because empower, I feel like, is a word that has been so diluted, overused, you know, this water empowers me or whatever, you know, or everything empowers you. And I was talking to a friend of mine and she said something about being empowered. And I was like, I'm so sick of that word. Like, it doesn't have any meaning anymore. And she said, then come up with your own word. I said, okay, I will. So I did a search on, you know, other words for empower, but they were all just like kind of boring words. And something else came up. This French philosopher, Henri Bergson, wrote a book called Creative Evolution in 1907. And he coined the phrase, or he coined the words élan vital. It was two different words and it means vital force. And so I thought, wow, that is really cool. Because that's really, and it's about this inner vital force that we all creatures, all cells have, and it creates who we are, right? Well, so think of a flower. Whenever it's seeded, it knows it's going to be a certain flower, or a tree, or what it knows it's going to be an apple tree, a lemon tree, whatever. So we are created to be something, you know, have a certain, that innate vital force inside of us. But because of culture, because of society, because of family, because of religion, because of government, the media, whatever, everything that we're exposed to really kind of suppresses that vital force. And so that's what that comes from within, because all of our perceptions that we have of ourselves and how we perceive things that are happening around us form our beliefs about who we are and the world around us. So we quash our own vital force, that inner vital force, and there's nothing really outside of us that can reignite that. Only we can do that ourselves. So that's where that came from.
Wow. that is some research. I love that you created your own words. And, you know, you feel about the empowerment word, I feel the heart-centered, like I'm so over heart-centered. Mm-hmm. And that's why I put my magazine as soul-hearted. And they're like, what does that mean? It's because I feel like everyone has good intentions. And I mean everyone, okay? Even the ones that you don't like people, I think everyone has good intentions. The problem is that they're heart-centered. They want to give back. But for me, some of those people who are wanting to give back, their passion is really not within their hearts. It's not, they're not aligned yet, right? I've seen people like that. So I switch it to soul-hearted individuals because I see people like you and I who's passionate about helping others because of our wisdom, because of our adversity, because of this, and we are able to, why not? And when you see people consistently showing up, even when no one is listening, that soul, that passion that exudes within your body, you can just see the light, right? And that's so that's right. When I see them, like, I only want soul-hearted people. I don't mind heart-centered, but they're not aligned on some of them. And so that's why I like, you know, soul-hearted. What are we celebrating? They couldn't hear me. Listen, it's not my house. It's my mom's house. The internet's wacko, okay? I'm fearing off my phone right now, so that's why we have internet. So basically, we're celebrating that we are number one international best-selling authors. Woo woo! I don't have my Rodecaster. I was like, my road to scream for us. Oh my gosh, it's so amazing. Like four of our anthologies, people, okay, four of anthologies this year literally hit number one international best-selling authors. And I was explaining to Michelle how we work it organically. We don't actually pay Amazon to market it for us. We literally hit, you know, link to other people's for our groups. And we always love our group that doing that. Oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you, Michelle and the rest of the crew for Against the Grain. And I do this for all anthologies. You guys can read your chapter. And for free, I will put it out for Audible and everywhere else if you want to read your chapter. Because some of our friends don't like to read, like Mike Asherburner. he wants to listen while he's doing laundry or going to his TP box. I don't know. But at least if you put it on Audible or Spotify, you can actually hear it. It goes to Apple Deezer, I mean, you name it, like 25 major distribution channels. So you guys got 90 days from me. If you want to read it, send the MP3 to me and I will put it out for everyone. So that is what we're celebrating. Isn't that cool? Back to Michelle. Now, in terms of your amazing, you know, journey and where you're at right now, can you answer me, like, how do we take care of this? If your client comes in and said, and you ask these questions, right? Now, reflecting on your own, like, habits and patterns, like, that's holding us back to achieve our goal, what are some of those things that you've seen?
Okay, so great example is I had a client who, she's brilliant, like, she's very well educated and, you know, has all the degrees and is certified in this and certified in that. And how many of us do that? Like, we feel like we need to get one more degree, one more certification to prove that we're worthy of whatever. And she would start businesses and she'd stop them. And, you know, or she would have some financial crisis within her business and then stop it. And so after going through the process of, you know, answering the questions and the questionnaire that I gave her, I can start to look for patterns or maybe things that were said to her or things that were exhibited in her environment growing up that could have contributed to this. And this is why she had come to me. And so what I'd noticed is that even as a child, like a young child, she excelled at everything. She excelled in school. She excelled in sports and basketball and track and all these different things and was always like the number one. And her mom continually told her, just and as moms do, without any kind of, you know, ill will, but she said, don't let your success go to your head. And she and so I thought, I said that and I said, well, your mom had told you not to allow your success to go to your head. Do you think that that could be a link here? And she had never made that connection. After we made that connection, her business has skyrocketed. You know, she's just doing amazing things because she recognized that it's not a bad thing to be successful. It's not a bad thing to make money doing what you love to do and helping others. And that it's not a humility issue. She didn't need to be humble about it. You know, she viewed success as a lack of humility. So that's one example. I have another client who does all the healthy things, you know, eats well, exercises and all that, but can't seem to shake, you know, she was at 205 whenever we first started working together. And this was about a year ago. She just couldn't seem to lose the weight and keep it off. She would do crash diets or cleanses and things like that, although she was still eating pretty well and not really, you know, consuming bad things. And doing all the right things. Well, what that boiled down to was whenever she was younger, her mom had said to her on several different occasions, because she's probably 5'3". She said, I just don't understand how you have such big legs for your, you know, your little body. And would tell her that no one's going to be attracted to you because unless you lose weight. And so her mom, and then her mom also recommended that she get a breast reduction because her breasts were big and would make her look smaller. I mean, just, you know, I don't know if it was well-meaning or what. Anyway, so whenever I helped her recognize the connection between what her mom thought of her and what she thought of herself, because we're very connected to our mothers. I mean, we came out of their, you know, came out of the womb, connected spiritually, emotionally, physically, and mentally to them. Once she disconnected from that and what her mom thought about what she looked like and how she should look, she lost 60 pounds without changing anything. And that's one of the greatest success stories, because she realized that she's not her weight. She is a beautiful person, regardless of what she weighs and regardless of what her mom thought of her. She also had a problem speaking her truth, or just actually saying what she wanted to say, because her dad used to tell her that she talked too much and you need to stop, you know, settle down, like, be quiet. and she can get excited, like she, you know, so she's learned now how to say what she wants to say without getting all like, you know, freaked out, and recognizing that her voice matters and that she is, what she has to say is important. So it's been a great journey with her over the last year. So those are some small things. You can think back, like, what was the message that was always said, like, or communicated either verbally or non-verbally? For myself, like, I didn't realize how it affected me, but I would make really dumb decisions. I mean, just, I don't know, I'm trying to step out of my box, and I would always end up getting in trouble or getting caught. And the overarching message to me was, you know, how is it that you can be so pretty and make such dumb decisions? You know, I'm like, those don't even connect. It's like,
I was cringing over here trying to be quiet of what you said, because people always said, oh my God, you can't be doing modeling or whatever because you're 5 feet tall.
Yeah.
So I did. I was doing that when I was a teenager. Oh, you can't do, like, you know, Miss Asia, whatever, because you're tall. So I did, you know, like, yeah. You can't have TV because you're Asian, you're Filipino, no one's going to watch you. So I did, you know, like, all of these things that they want, it motivates me to actually do more. But I'm so done with doing that, because it's like, I've already owned my own thing. Culturally, it's really hard. Like, when you're Asian, especially, okay, I can only speak for my Asian culture, is like, you cannot say what you want to say. You have to go around it, mm-hmm. to say that you're successful without saying that you're successful.
Right. Okay?
Because then you're like, oh, you think you're all that. Like, mm-hmm. what, you know? And so the way I look at assertiveness that maintains humility is, mm-hmm. I acknowledge other people's perspective. So if they said, hey, I bought a house and da 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 da, I don't say, oh, I bought a house too.
Right.
Let me celebrate that moment. Like, I used to think that to connect with others is to actually acknowledge what they're saying, but also like say what I also have. But it, to me, it comes out as competition.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And so, but in my head, it wasn't competition. It was to relate. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, I've lived so many things in my life that I can have conversations on pretty much anything. Like, you know, you want to talk about. Some people can only talk about one industry. I'm on all industries. I've done jobs in all industries. I've done, you know, conversations in all industries, presented in all industries, research and do some stuff. So it's hard. So I try to like dial it down and said, okay, I'm going to be respectful in my communications. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be direct. But here's the thing. When you're direct, some people think that you have to be hurtful of people's emotions to be direct. You don't have to. It's a choice. It's a choice of words that you use. But I own my own strengths and I own my own limitations because I'm confident in my abilities because I've already done it. Right. But I think we need to focus on solutions, not dominance. Approaching disagreements with goal of collaboration rather than, I'm going to win that argument, Michelle. Like, I'm the best. Who cares? You know what I mean? If you can't give me a solution. And then practice empathy. Honestly, like, understand that kindness goes in many forms, but reinforces that assertiveness. Like, I think this is what you can do. And I think I've also seen when I give feedback as a statement rather than a question, I get some students get offended, like, oh my God, this sounds condescending, rather than seeing it in a different way. Because again, we come from different cultures and environment, right?
Right.
So I think by having a question out of curiosity, like, for example, instead of saying, oh God, CJ, you've gained a lot of weight. I mean, from the years I've known you, you're always been like 90 pounds. How the heck are you almost 120? Like, what made you fat? You know what I mean? Like, okay, I have families who says that to me, okay? So instead of saying, and I coached him and I'm like, okay, first of all, what constitute fat? Because I know I got a fat ass. I don't know what to tell you with that. Like, it's just, it is what it is. Like,
I'm not
going to cut it out, you know? And here's the thing. I have mommy floaties. I can probably float if you throw me in the ocean right now. But I had two kids. Like, what do you want me to do with that, right? And I said, I'm not for everybody, but I am for somebody, mm-hmm. right? And here's the thing. have you looked at yourself in the mirror? And then they looked at me like, and I'm like, okay, because we're talking about me, let me tell you about you. Are you ready? And they're like, no, don't tell me. I'm like, exactly. So what made you think that I was ready for your conversation to ask me to call me fat? Like, really?
Yeah.
And so they couldn't argue. I'm like, no, it's my turn to tell you. And she walked away. So I followed her and told her anyway.
Well, and so to that point, like one of the things, I used to get offended by everything, like everything offended. And I wouldn't say anything, but I would silently maybe hold a grudge or just be like, well, she's a, you know what, or he's a jerk or whatever. But one of the things I started doing to turn around what I thought about other people were what they were saying is to approach it from my standpoint. My mindset is that everybody's dealing with their own stuff and it's not about me, you know, whenever those things happen, and just to assume the best from everybody. Maybe that just didn't come out right, or maybe I took that the wrong way, or, you know, I'm not going to waste my time, energy mulling over or being worried about what other people, what I perceive other people think of me. And that's the thing that got me to the point that the whole tennis team thing, where I was like, I just imploded and burnt a lot of bridges just by being a complete jerk. And that was on me, you know, not on them. And so, but that was the thing. I was like, okay, I got to stop thinking that other people are thinking a certain way, or that they mean harm by doing these things, you know, projecting. I was projecting. So,
yeah. And we all do. I think we all do. I project sometimes too. And I project on my kids because I talk to them all the time, because I have a 20-year-old and a 17-year-old going 40. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I said, okay, I need to be more like introspective. So I try to speak less when my brain is working, because I'm trying to navigate how I'm going to say it where it comes out where it's supposed to be. Because how many times we have a conversation, we go into the conversation trying to apologize, mm-hmm. and then you don't remember what you're apologizing. So it comes out on like not authentic. And then the person that you're trying to apologize feels that. And then now you're on a second argument that you don't even remember what the first argument was all about.
And you're like, what, how did we get here? Exactly.
I know. And I'm like, I'm here to apologize. Why are we having another freaking fret? Like, okay, can we just stop for a moment, please? I'm sorry, whatever I said, because my ADHD just took, and you're like, excuses, CJ. I'm like, no, seriously. I don't remember the exact moment how we got here. Like, I apologize, you know?
Yeah. But
here's another thing that I wanted to bring about you. Like, how do you actually handle if someone was like, hey, how do you fears or self-sabotage influence the choices that we make? And how might these fears contribute to self-sabotaging behaviors? Can you give me some type of advice on that?
Yeah. So let's take weight loss for an example, because this is kind of how I started down this path. As I started off as a nutrition and lifestyle coach, and my clients would have really great success for the 6 months they were working with me, and they would lose the weight and they would stay on the plan, you know. And then a year later, they call me, they were like, oh, I've gained the weight back plus more. Can we start working together again? And so, of course, I took it personally, because I'm like, I must not have done a good job as a coach. This is early in my coaching career. And so we would start working together again. I would focus on, let's talk about your why. Let's talk about your why. And the why a lot of times is like, well, I want to lose the weight because I'm going to Hawaii in a couple of weeks, or, you know, in a couple of months. I'm like, well, that's kind of, you know, short-term thinking. Let's think long-term. But what it kind of boils down to, but what I've learned through the self-sabotage and the subconscious and limiting beliefs, identifying those, is a lack of feeling worthy of losing the weight, a fear of missing out, the FOMO, like, well, am I not going to be able to go and have, for me, Mexican food with my family and enjoy it? Am I just going to have to sit there and watch everybody eat the chips? Like, that's like my Achilles heel right there, some corn chips and salsa. And so there's that fear of missing out, and there's always an excuse as not to do something. You know, well, I'll wait until Monday. I'm going to enjoy the weekend. I'll wait until after New Year's, my New Year's resolution. That's really that putting yourself off like that is actually putting yourself last. And that's another thing that keeps people from moving forward, is that they feel guilty, or they feel like they're being selfish for self-care. because like for women, for, you know, stay-at-home moms, I was a stay-at-home mom for however 20 something years until my last one went to college, you know, and the other one comes back and all that. You know, it felt not right at times to put myself first. But what I realized, and my daughter actually wrote me the sweetest note, it's hanging on my wall. She said, you know, you putting yourself first has shown me self-care, and it's been, you've been such an inspiration to me through your journey. And she's young, you know, she's going to be 24 this month, next week, actually. And the fact that she sees that at 24 is so, like, I wish I would have seen that at 24. Right. So the fears and self-doubt that influence our decisions, a lot of times they're subconscious. We don't even realize that they're there. I mean, I might say, well, of course I'm worthy of blah, 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 but do I actually believe it? And so what you can start doing is questioning those crazy thoughts that come up in your mind. Like, you know what I'm saying? That if anybody spoke to you, like for me, I used to be super critical of everybody else, but really it was judgment of myself. I was being critical of myself because I expected everybody to be a certain way. I wrote about this in the book, in my chapter. If everybody would just change and do what I expect them to do, then the life would be perfect and I could be happy. And that was literally a thought that went through my mind.
That's so crazy.
It's embarrassing. I mean, you know.
It's not embarrassing because you're not alone. Like, sometimes I feel like, man, I wish I had a magic wand. It just makes people forget what they're saying and fear and all of these things. Because for me, it's like fears and self-sabotage can influence my choice. Mm-hmm. It creates this mindset like of hesitation and like you then avoid. Because it's rooted, our fears are really rooted in the fear of failure, rejection, mm-hmm. and inadequacy. Like we don't feel enough, right? So it leads to like, now we're overthinking it. Now we're procrastinating. Now we're rejecting opportunities before even attempting them, right? So it's to protect ourselves really from potential disappointment. So fear.
It's so easy to talk yourself out of doing something because you come up with all the reasons of why it won't work and it didn't work last time. Why would it work now? And am I too old to change? I was talking to somebody the other day who's 75 and she's like, aren't I too old to change? I'm like, you're still breathing. You know, you can change. So
it's hard to change when you're older. You know, when they said you can't teach old dogs new tricks, right? That's what they always, the whole thing. But I think fears contribute to self-sabotaging behaviors by reinforcing our cycle of inaction or suboptimal decisions that we do. So ultimately, it prevents us from growth and achieving our goals. Now, as women, we say, oh, we're not perfect. We don't believe in perfection. But and then the other side of us, like, you can do it better. You know what I mean? You can totally do this better. I think for me, the key to breaking the cycle is making more empowered choices. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, making more empowered choices. But the thing is, a lot of times we think we're making empowered choices, but they're not really empowering for us. It might be what somebody else thinks is best for you. That's why I don't like that whole empower concept, because it's coming from outside of you, right? And it's a force from without instead of that force from within. And so if you can connect with that inner voice, that critical, that inner critic, which we've heard about ad nauseum, but it is a real thing. What do you do when you wake up in the morning and you look in the mirror? What's the first thing you do? Like mine used to be like, God, my eyes are so puffy, or you know, I must not have slept very well last night, you know, or whatever. What are these wrinkles on my chest? I need to do something about that. Well, the first thing I was doing was criticizing myself in the morning. You know, before I get out of bed now, I'm grateful for the day. Even the other night, I could not get to sleep. I had a bunch of stuff on my mind, some things going on, and some extended family situations. I just couldn't settle my brain down. And so at like 4 or 2 o'clock, I was like, okay, if I can just get 4.5 hours of sleep, I'll be golden. And I did, I got to sleep and I got 4.5 hours of sleep. Well, normally I would wake up and be like, ugh, I only got 4.5 hours of sleep. But I woke up and I was like, thank you, God, for the 4.5 hours of sleep that I did get last night. Let me, pray that I can be productive today and have a great outlook. And actually, that was yesterday morning. It was a great day, you know? So, whereas normally,
grateful heart gets you everywhere. I know sometimes too in my situations, I'm like, oh, I have to do this, da 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 da. And then I look outside my window. I'm like, oh, there's the Bay Area. It's so beautiful. I can hear the kids. It's cool down. Like, I don't have great internet here, but man, I still have TV, roof over my head. It's a beautiful view. It's a $2 million view. Why not? You know, like, I always look for that. And I love that you talk about that. Now, let's talk about your business, right? We talked about the process of how people are thinking and what are some of the thoughts that we go through on a daily basis, literally, right? We're so overcritical about ourselves and everything else. Like, I joke around and like, oh, I don't want to deal with you because I don't want to have wrinkles. I joke around about that. But honestly, I am very determined. Like, I feel like when we get into the negative thoughts and we count our negative adversity that we go through every day, your entire being, your entire mood is so tense because you're always thinking about what you don't have rather than what you have that's grateful for. I'm also grateful for what I don't have. I don't have cancer. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
don't have that, right? Yeah. You gotta be grateful for what you don't have and what you do have, because sometimes we're so focused on wanting. And I think when you hit that level 5 of Maslow's hierarchy, which is self-actualization, that's when you're like, what is my personal growth? At the end of that life channel that you have, guys, with your journey, you're going to ask, what have I done for others? And if you can count what you have done for others in less than 10 fingers, you can do more. I'm just saying, you can do more. And I want Michelle to tell us, what do you do for our community and how can we involve and collaborate with you? What are some of the things in your program that we can actually take advantage from?
Well, I do have a self-sabotage quiz on my website at elanvital-coaching.com. And that kind of will give you a baseline. It's a fun quiz. It's an easy quiz. It takes like 30 seconds to do. And it'll kind of tell you where you fall on the spectrum. And you can book a free consultation with me via my website. I've got some resources on my website as well. What you eat is super important. So I've got a blood sugar guide, how to balance your blood sugar. How you think is super important. So I've got a meditation book that I wrote. I actually did my capstone project on meditation for my master's. And then I also have a 7-day journal that's in. You know, I'm not great at journaling. I even write about this in that chapter. It's like I off and on. But if you can do it for 7 days, and these are not just the typical questions that normal, you know, journal would ask, but they're really introspective questions, and just really think about those things. And just so those are on my website. But I'm very big on making sure other people feel loved on and feel appreciated. So I don't know. I will reach out to somebody that I haven't talked to in a while, or, you know, if somebody comes to your mind, there's a reason for that. So just do something with it. Call them, send them a text.
Because a lot of people are on my mind right now, Michelle. Man, I'm going to be busy all morning.
Write it down. Yeah, no, just send a note. But, you know, it's the little things that you do daily for your community, for the people that you are around. It's a smile. It's opening the door. Like, one of the things that I used to get so annoyed by is that people just like open the door and like, you know, I'm like coming and they just let it. And I'm like, why am I annoyed by that? Like, why don't I just be the person that I want to see in the world? You know, isn't that like Buddha or somebody said that? Open the door for somebody. Well, when you do that, it actually has an effect on the collective consciousness. Just doing small, kind things for people and thinking the best of others, regardless of what their views are, how they've spoken to you, what they look at, you know, how they look at you or whatever. Those are just small things that I try to do on a daily basis and in my community, in my life and all that.
I love that. I do like little small things. I wanting to, my goal now in next year really is to help more impact and legacy through writing. Because I believe that some of them, not all, I don't think I've seen all, but some of our co-authors have gone through, you know, writing other people's anthologies and things like that, but also really had growth, like exponentially, they grow that growth mindset of, I can do this. There is community that appreciates me. I can do this. And sometimes, guys, if you feel all alone, like you're on your own journey and you're like, man, this is going to be hard, reach out to somebody. Reach out to Michelle.
Yeah.
Right? Reach out to me. Reach out to just like anything. Because here's the thing. It's not, I really believe in collaboration over competition. Because even if we're doing the same thing, which we are, helping our community, we're doing it differently. And even if you don't agree with some of the things that might come out of our mouths or what we say, it's not that one thing that you don't like that is beneficial to you. It's the whole package, right? Right. And so I love that you have the whole package. You're so like kind, you're so giving. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you're so open to, hey, this is what I had issues, you know? And I was in the back of my head, I'm so bad, Michelle. I was really thinking when you said, oh, you know, I had a drinking problem. I'm like, oh, Michelle, I wanted to go to your house. Let's get some Dom Perignon or Cristal right now with lavender in there. Like, you know, and I'm like, CJ, don't say it. Don't say it.
I will say that I quit drinking for a long period of time. Because I had to figure out why I was drinking so much and why it was such a crutch and why, you know, and I knew I was using it as a coping mechanism, but I will have a glass of wine once every 6 weeks, you know, kind of thing. Like my husband and I went out to dinner on Saturday night. I said, I'm actually going to have a cocktail with you tonight. And he said, what? And he was like, okay. Like he was like blown away, you know? And that's not a regular occurrence. It was a special occurrence, but I didn't feel like I needed to keep on drinking to get that high, like I had before, you know? So I will have some Dom Perignon with you.
Yes. Dom or Cristal. I have a 2014 in my house. I haven't opened because, that's my husband and I's celebration drink always when we celebrate something. Right. But right now, Michelle, I'm giving you permission with your husband, like number one international bestselling author. Hello. Yeah. Like, why not?
Yes.
Maybe just a sip or two. Now, can you repeat exactly, where your website can be found, please?
Yes. So it's Elan Vital, one word, -coaching.com.
Elan.com. Okay. All right. And I have, what do you call this? I have a blood sugar issue as well. So I'm going to check out that quiz because I want to see. So I always carry on my purse candy or orange juice is actually the best, but like candy because I used to faint a lot because I didn't know that I had low blood sugar. Like I get hypoglycemic. And I don't have diabetes, but I don't really like sugar anyway. Like I'm not a cake person, but I love like sugary things sometimes, especially mm-hmm. in my coffee. And so this will give me kind of an idea about, you know, sugar. And I think sugar is bad for you, period. It makes you gain weight. It gives you so much issue, but it's so good and addicting. I'm like, oh, it's killing me. Oh, my doctor told me, you can't have sugar and you can't have chocolate. I'm like, you're fired. I'm not having this conversation with you. But thank you so much for today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And also, we're going to see you in our podcast on Friday. So watch out for that, guys. This conversation will be on Spotify. And also, Michelle will be providing you with a free consultation. So just come try, talk to her and see what we can come up with. And if you need anything else, let me know. And if you can't find Michelle, she's also on LinkedIn. If you can't find her, please go ahead and find me. But elanvital-coaching.com just came up for me. And Elan Vital spells ELANVITAL. It just comes up for me right away. So I love that. And I also love the part where you have kind words in there. for your testimonials. I love those. Thank you so much for sharing those.
It's so, like, for me, helping somebody to, you know, jump a hurdle or to have that realization, like, okay, that makes sense. And then make these significant changes. And sometimes they're just really small changes. Like I told you that my client that lost 60 pounds, she didn't, it was a mindset of hers. It was a feeling of being unworthy and that I'm always going to be overweight and I'm never going to get married because no one likes somebody overweight. Whenever she started loving herself in a different way and seeing herself as worthy, the weight just fell off. And it's just been a fun, you know, it's been a fun process to watch. So
I know when I grow up, I want to be Michelle Ward. I want to be Michelle Ward when I grow up. Thank you guys so much. Thank you, Hansa Business Community and my sisters out there for coming in. We appreciate you. We love you and have a beautiful day. Bye, everybody. Thank you. Thank you.